What's 10?
10.
10, okay. What step are we on, I asked Marie. Man, I can't feel my legs. I mean, okay, we're almost there, folks, please help us, say a prayer. So did you have any more you wanted to say?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right. Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of his spirit into us. To some extent, we've become God-conscious. I'd like to do a little parallel about God-conscious. So let's say, somebody, just please, somebody here, yell out the make of car you love the most.
Xterra.
Xterra, is that a Ford?
Nissan.
Nissan, okay. So now, you love Xterra. So when you're out driving around, are you aware of other Xterras?
Yes.
Okay, we'll call that Xterra consciousness. You see where I'm going with this? So if this is what you like, you're going to see Xterras everywhere. I haven't seen an Xterra, and I can't even tell you how long.
What's an Xterra?
What's an Xterra? That's right. It's kind of like a Porsche Carrera, only, but anyway.
It's like a Jeep kind of car.
It's like a Jeep kind of car.
It's like a yellow, like the baddest one, but.
Now, we have to be nice about this, Dave. All right, but you get my point? If you have that consciousness, you're going to see Xterras everywhere. All right, we have begun to develop, oh, to some extent, we have become God-conscious. We might see God everywhere. We might see God more frequently than we think we are. Quick story, five, 6 years ago, we went to Rome. Now, if you were to ask me, what is your favorite takeaway from Rome? I would tell you the beggars. The beggars in Rome, they put their foreheads on the sidewalk, and they have a beggar's bowl at their head. God, if you can't react to that, you're dead. So we decided to walk along the Tiber. It's this crazy historic thing, you know? Marie and I wanted to walk from Vatican City over to the Tiber River and just take a walk. And so we went past this woman, and she had her head down, and she had a shawl over her head. And I put a euro or two of the metal ones in her bowl, and she looked up at me. She had the most beautiful green eyes I have ever seen in my life. I will never forget that beggar in Rome. It's extraordinary. And you know what the truest cross of a beggar is? They feel like they're invisible. So even if you're not going to give, at least look at them. You know what I mean, right? There, but for the grace of God. Okay. We have developed, begun to develop this vital sixth sense, but we must go much further, and that means more action. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude, which for me is he's God and I'm not, and work at it. All right, so we're going to start out with the nightly review. So of all the people I sponsor, I ask them this question, are you doing your nightly review? Well, not as much as I should be, which means no. I can't tell you that there's any magic in the nightly review. I do it to be obedient. They gave me this tool, so I do the nightly review. It takes about 2 minutes or under. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? And so I make a picture, I have a picture. That's when I was resentful, that's when I was dishonest, whatever it is, and that's it. And I move on. I don't wallow in it, I just say yes. And I was one or all of those things.
Can you do it? You tell them that you do it out loud.
Oh, yes. So Marie and I do this together. I will read these out loud, or actually I know them by heart, but we'll say them out loud, and we answer them in silence. This is what we do at the end of the day. Do we owe an apology? And it goes on with these questions. Were we thinking of ourselves, it goes on to say, most of the time, or were we thinking what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? And it goes on like that. It's 2 minutes. But, you know, we're tired. And we want the day to end. Why? Because we want to escape. We don't want to be in Realityville anymore. We want to cancel Realityville and go asleep and be unconscious. Let's have this moment before we do. Why? Who knows? Maybe your life could be better if you did it. Who knows? There's ain't but one way to find out, and that's to do it, right? Okay. We're in the 11th step. So, and on awakening, Marie and I, we have, it says in here, if you have something that your religion requires or asks of you, you can do that, or you can look up at the 24 hours ahead. Whatever you do, we're preparing to walk into our day with God. Marie and I, we have a practice that we do. You know, it's amazing. I want to tell you this. I love the Jewish people. I just love the Jewish people. So what we do is we have, there is an admonition in Scripture that says, pray without ceasing. Pray without ceasing. So in the stricter versions of Judaism, they have a phylactery. They put a phylactery on their forehead. It's a leather box, and it's tied with straps. And in it, they have a psalm. They have a psalm in there. And this is to remind them to pray without ceasing. Well, in the Catholic Church, we have hours of the day. You know, we have matins and lauds, and it has these names. But it's morning, mid-morning, afternoon, mid-afternoon, evening, and night. Marie and I are not bound to do all of those, but we do morning prayer. So what we do is we sing three psalms together. We sing the psalms. We pray for you. We pray for our children. We do our prayers. You know, we have this formal ritual that we do, and we end up with the Lord's Prayer. So whatever we're doing, we're going to walk into our day with God. Don't walk into your day without God. I'm telling you. You don't need to be told that, correct? I want to shift over to meditation. It doesn't tell us in here how to meditate. And I tried meditation, and I said, nah. I had an expectation that in meditation, I would, like, you know, levitate, bare minimum. The smell of roses. Something's going to happen. And so, like, Marie is over in the form of meditation, and I did transcendental meditation, or I tried it. I'm doing this thing. I'm not going anywhere. I can't stand it. It's like, whatever. So I didn't meditate for 30 years, P.S. I just didn't do it. Because I had a picture of what was supposed to happen, and I'm just like, I guess I'm meditation immune. And then I start meeting these guys, Gary B's one, and my sponsor Marty, and these people, and I'm a brand new bootmaker, and I'd call Marty my sponsor. This was after Cookie. And I'd call Marty, and I'd say, blah, 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 wham, 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 about the boots. And he would listen very courteously, and he would always say two things. He would say, Mickey, it ain't about the boots. And did you meditate today? And I'm going like, Marty, I told you, meditation is not for me. It doesn't work. And then I'd call him again, and you get the picture. We'd go through this. And I noticed these two men, Marty and Gary. Gary, I think, now has about 55 years of sobriety. But they have a sweetness to their spirit that I would love to have. And I noticed that sweetness in their spirit. And both of them would say, Mickey, are you meditating? No. And you would think my no would be the end of the conversation. It's not. So finally, I heard about this form of meditation, which, I could give it a name, but here's basically what it is. I sit in a chair for 15 minutes, first thing in the morning. I give God the first 15 minutes of the day he's given me to thank him. I give him the first fruits of my day, and we do this. And we sit. And so Marie's going like, I got to a place where I wasn't a woman, I wasn't a wife, I was a person, and she's having this thing. And I'm over there, and I got monkey mind, and I'm jumping from tree to tree in the monkey mind, and I'm looking at this electrical schematic of the house. And she's like, you know, and I'm having this diaphanous experience. But let me tell you what happened. What happened was, after a while, one of the lovely things about being married is you have a living mirror. And Marie and I occasionally will give each other report cards, and they're kind. But in any event, Marie said to me, you know, Mickey, you've really changed. She said, there's a sweetness in your spirit. Now I'm going to tell you how I think this is happening. I have zero clue. I'm just going to tell you what I think. And I want to go to the negative part first. If I forget to meditate within 1 hour, I will turn rattlesnake. I will be picking at you. I will be angry. I can't breathe. I'm not doing well. And I've forgotten, P.S., that I didn't meditate. But here it is, the power of this meditation. And all I'm doing is planting my rear end in that chair for 15 minutes, and I've given up hoping that I'm ever going to see maybe one angel wing. Zero. It's like boots, 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 boots. And Marie will say, not all the time, but she'll say, God, that was a great meditation, wasn't it? And what I think is happening is this. How many times do we want to use this coconut to guide our lives instead of our souls, instead of our hearts? So I think that the purpose of this, it's not intellectual. I don't have anything to do except park my butt in that chair for 15 minutes. I think God is working around the coconut, around my head, and going in and doing spiritual surgery. I think he's transforming my soul, and he's giving me zero part in it. Isn't that wonderful? So if somebody were to put a gun to my head and said, Mickey, you got a choice. You can either pray or meditate. Which one would you choose? I would choose meditation. I don't feel better coming up from that chair. I am not wafting through the room. I'm just telling you something is happening and it's changing my life. And when I get the report card, it's like this good report card, except on the days I forget to do it. What would you like to say?
He's being honest about that.
Go figure, right?
And when I started meditating, and we started together because I tried and I got nothing also, but I also have a rebellious nature, so I say to myself, okay, sit down and do this meditation for 15 minutes. And I go, no, I don't want to. And I do that with many things in my life. It's just, you know, it's like, no, you can't make me. And that's about the voice that I use, too. And so I do it, you know, once, and I go, yeah, that's stupid. And then I go back and I do it again, and on about the 50th one, I'm going, okay, I'll do it. And then on the 100th one, I'm going, that's not bad. And on the 200th one, I'm going, you know, I think it's okay. And there's a part of me that is, it has a really hard time giving in. And the more I do it, the more I want to do it. And then the other part is that the prayer part, you know, I hear a lot of people in meetings say, repetitive prayer is stupid, you know? It's like you're just saying the same thing over and over again. And ours is not completely repetitive because there are different psalms each day, and then they repeat themselves and all that. But, and you know, me saying I don't want to do it.
To herself.
To myself. I never complained to him because I wouldn't look spiritual then. And then, you know, he would have one up on me. Okay. So what's happened is that I will be in the middle of meditation and I'll say, you know, to myself, I'm training my soul. I am saying these things. And just like with the surgery, that that's some of my best meditations is when I just really feel like, you know, I'm lying down and God is doing surgery on me, soul surgery. And, you know, if I were in real surgery, I wouldn't be saying, okay, now, doctor, you know, you have to go over here a little bit. And, you know, I wouldn't have any idea what he needed to do. So I don't, you know, I don't tell God what to do. But it's kind of like the same. I get in there and I say, my soul needs to be taught a lot of things. And so I might not even be listening to the words sometimes, but I know that my soul is being taught and brought under, you know, his hand. I'm just rebellious, you know. I'm kind of ornery that way, and so I love the repetitive prayer. I love that, and then we always have a time when we pray for specific people who really need it, and you know, and I don't pray for their problems to go away. I just pray for them to be strong and for God to be with them, you know, and. I love that. I also love the fact that I'm encouraged, as I encouraged Mickey, to do this, because it's really easy to get lazy and say, oh, wow, I had to get to a doctor's appointment, you know? And we do it even if we're on the plane or in the train going to the plane or, you know, I mean, if we have to leave early, we still do it. And It just makes all the difference in the world. After I got past the, you know, I don't want to do it phase, it's natural. It's just, it's part of breathing, you know. That's all.
Thank you. Okay, so here we go off the high board again. I heard about this woman, and she is a wonderful woman, and this is not in the big book. This is a prayer practice outside the big book, but I want to share it with you because it's been very significant in our lives. Anyway, she talks, and she's saying, hey, you know, and she's a medical intuitive, and she's just tremendous. She's unbelievable. And so she says, you know, if in the course of this talk, which is called spiritual madness, and I'm just giving you the name of it, whatever, do with it as you please or don't. She says, you know, if you can't sleep, you could say to God, God, I'm right here, talk to me. And then write down what you get. So we're going along, and I was an insomniac for about 30 years, so I had plenty of nighttime to operate in. So I got my book. Now, my mom was in a rehab unit because she had had a brain operation, and she was getting ready to come home and live with us in 10 days. And so a brain aneurysm, that's what it was. And so so I got my pen out, and it's like 3:00 in the morning, and I write down, and it says, Mickey, your mother's going to die. It's okay. Your relationship is tied up with a ribbon, which took a long, long time for me and my mother. And everything's okay. And my mother died the next day. And I had the support. You know what I mean? Going into this, that my mother's going to die. And so I kept writing, I call them these pages. I kept writing the pages. And you remember when I gave that quote, Mickey, you don't need more money, you need more God. Right? You don't need more money. That was in the pages. And we have been directed by these pages. I don't write them all the time. But there's come a time and I will say, God, will you talk to me? And I don't care what he wants to say. Do you know what I mean? Just talk to me. And we have gotten the direction in our lives for 18 years.
And I want to say, excuse me, that in the beginning of AA, the people would go into their meditation in the morning.
The Oxford group.
The Oxford group. Yeah, it was kind of before AA. And they would do this very thing. So, you know, there's precedence in that way. And they would just write down what God told them. And I believe that the book God Calling is from that time
that
period.
That same experience.
And that's the same experience. So, anyway.
So, it turns out to be one of these things, and it's not like who's going to win the paramutual at the track or anything. It's not like that. What are the lottery numbers? It's not that. But it is a reassurance when I get tied in knots and I can't seem to find any comfort, I will go to God in that way. And you might give it a shot. You might give it a shot. Who knows?
Yeah, many people have tried it, and it's very effective. I can't do it. I don't have the.
Our daughter tried it, and it really kind of freaked her out, and she stopped it, and so on down the line. But in any event, it has really, really, really helped us.
Yeah.
Now, here's the truth of the matter. We have arrived at basically the end of the time allotted for our time together. I was talking to someone before the meeting, and St. Vincent de Paul said, I will pass this way but once. Let any good I can do for any person be done now, for I shall not pass this way again. Told you I have separation anxiety. We're not getting out of here without tears, because I don't know what your experience has been in this time, but for me it's been a conversation. I feel like it's not like just we're monologuing out here. I feel like we've been talking together. Is that an experience you've had? So what you mean to us, you're our family. We are brothers and sisters. We are mothers and fathers. We are daughters and sons. The 12th step, obviously, is to carry this message to people who are suffering. Those poor suffering bastards are out there, trust me. You know, statistics, and these are mother-in-law statistics. I love that, because that's all we can have in AA. One out of every 50 alcoholics makes it to Alcoholics Anonymous. These are lousy odds. And of those, 50% go back. And then of those, 25, you know, percent will come back. And I'm not a math major. I probably screwed the math up. But you get the idea. And so they're out there, and they're dropping down into death right now at this very minute. So we know that we need to reach out. What it is, it's like an electrician. You know, you can plug, you know, you can have all the electric cord in the world. But until that circuit is completed, the power doesn't flow. Now, that power is flowing in us. That's in us. And it will reach out to other people. So we're about to say goodbye. And I'm dragging this out like I'm telling you. I'm just dragging it out, because to be with you has been so special. Turns out we are all special. Marie.
You talked about your infidelity.
Yes.
You talked about your sex life.
Yes.
But you didn't tell us about your children.
Oh, She said, we've talked about various things, but we didn't, thank you. We didn't talk about our children or our grandchildren. Thank you so much. So here's the deal. We have three kids. Well, they're not kids, they're grown. That daughter who finally one day figured out the math. And we named her Amy after the French ami, because from conception we felt that we had our friend coming to be with us. And she is married. I'll tell you this. So what happens? There was a time when I sponsored all these single young men, you know? And in that sponsorship, I would ask them, I wonder where the woman is God has for you tonight. I wonder what she's doing. And little did I know, for this guy, she was upstairs. It was my daughter. And so they got married, and...
You heard his fifth step first.
Yeah, but I got to hear his fifth step first. He's a good guy, as it turns out. Thank you, God. And our daughter, Amy, all she wanted for her whole life, we had a 70s experiment. We were going to treat her like a person and not a girl. So we bought her stuffies instead of dolls. And she started showing up with, like, if she could have had gloves up to here. She wore dresses to dinner at night. She wore, you know, her little patent leather shoes. Like, I'm a girl. I am a girl. And so what she wanted was to be a mother, a wife, a mother and a wife. And so she married Joe, and he's a wonderful man. He's a real stand-up guy. And they have seven children. And so the kids are starting, so they go from like 22 to 7, okay? But now that they're starting, you know, the oldest one is about to graduate from college, and now the next oldest one is going to the same college, and because he's really the only one who's been providing an income, you know, they need to get scholarships, so the first two got these great scholarships. And so Amy's like trying to find something to do with her time, so she's now doing daycare in this church. And she said, she wrote us and she says, it's like, they're like 3 years old and 4 years old. She said, it's like working with monkeys in clothes. So she's got she's got this thing going on. Sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. Joe is sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And
when she realized she had a problem, she went to her daddy because, you know, it's always been a very open subject for us. And but she went to her daddy, and that was such an honor, you know.
So she's my little girl. She's not my little girl so much. She's coming up on 48 years old. She's beautiful. She's just beautiful. So then we go to our first son, Neil, and Neil lives in Buffalo, New York, and he is married and has two daughters. And Neil is a real man. I think we've explored a little bit about what it means to be a real man, right? So Neil met somebody in college, and she has multiple personality disorder, and he knew it going in, and he married her. He's a real man, and he's very soft-spoken, but you can't, he's a Capricorn. You can't budge him if he takes a position, but he loves her. Our only prayer for Neil is, God, please give him somebody who loves him something terrible, and she loves him something terrible, and most of her personalities, for the most part, most of the time, are integrated, and they have two daughters, and then comes Peter. So what happened? Now, we lost two children in the course of, you know, of having our marriage. But we put that in God's hands. That's God's business. That's not my business. Our job is to give it a try. And in those two, Marie keeps saying from time to time, she says, I can't wait to meet them in heaven. So we're going along, and Marie's lost two children, and she doesn't want to have any more children. You know, it hurts, and it hurt her. And so I told her, I said, Marie, we're missing somebody. I had this feeling so strong, you can't believe it. There's one more that has to come and be with us. And so she went up on the mountain, you know what I'm saying, to be with God and just struggle to think, okay, am I going to be pregnant again? So she's pregnant, and she had our son, Peter. Now, Peter is a very unusual person. Peter, he was like, he would go to school. His vocabulary was enormous. And he'd go to school and get D's and F's. And he wasn't disruptive in class. He's a very gentle, wonderful guy. And so I went over, I'll make this as fast as I can. I went over to the library one day, and you know in the library they put the books that they, that's like a new book. They want to star this book, so they put it on top of the stacks. And so I went into the library and I looked up, and there was a book, and it says, "They can, but they don't." And it was this guy doing his PhD in a learning disability, where that act of doing homework and everything just defeats them. It just defeated him. So what happened is the solution was to let him be. Because I came home from the library and I said, "Peter, I found out what's going on with you." And the pressure came off of him and it came off of us. And so this is a pass me down thing. My father always wanted to sing, and I was a professional singer. He wasn't. I always wanted to be a Catholic priest, and Peter is a Catholic priest. And he has a man bun, and he's twice tattooed. And he is rock climbing in his Jeep. And when he was going into his new parish, he stood up on the student center, and he rapped to the kids. And he's like, who's that guy, the Pied Piper? They just follow Peter. They love Peter. And so he has the campus ministry for the kids up at University of Colorado. And he started a cafe, because he said, you know, Jesus encouraged people to come around because he'd feed them. So he has this coffee house. If you met our children, you would love them. I am biased, of course. But you would love them. They would sit right down and they would talk to you and they would be engaged in that conversation. And I asked Marie, I told her, I'm going to work at home because my dad was always gone. He was always gone in a good cause, but he was always gone. So we had our ad agencies in our house, and I worked at home. We were there when they left, and we were there when they came home. Marie, thank you for asking about that.
I must say, I had a little taste of Peter when I wrote the Peter song. I know it was interesting and warm.
Oh, my God. You guys have been so patient.
I have to tell one story. I was talking to somebody early in this conference, and I was talking about what the program has done in our family. And one of the things it's done is that there's no age in the program. You notice if you know you're looking around and you're going, well, are they old or are they young? I don't know. They're just people, you know. And I remember one time we were having an AA Christmas party or some party, and the kids were like serving pop and stuff like that to people. And I said, "Where's Peter?" And he was in the living room talking to some lady who was pregnant and saying, "Well, now when are you due?" Now he's 8 years old. And he has no, you know, none of them have any kind of, like, they're the big kids, don't talk to them, you know, I'm a little kid, I'm
you're
not worth
young,
anything.
You're too young,
yeah.
You're too old, you're too this.
And, no. But AA and Al-Anon is like this beautiful, like,
melting
we accept,
pot.
It's yeah. A melting pot. And it's a, you know, let's just all love each other. And there's just no differences. And so, I thank all of you, and all of the people that I've met in all the rooms for helping to raise our children and being a part of our life in the way that there's no difference if you're young or old or new or whatever, you know? It's like we're just another brick in the wall, but we are a brick in the wall, and we make this great, solid foundation. And thank you you know? I love being a part of this. Sometimes it's a little awkward to be the only Al-Anon in the room, but I'm not the only Al-Anon in the room. But oftentimes, you know, it's like I could feel like the odd man out. I've never been made to feel like the odd man out. Because we're all on this journey together. And I thank you all for accepting us and me. And
thank you for making us feel so welcome.
Yeah.
Why don't we try to make a circle out of this? Is that a good plan?
Yeah.
All right.